There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Glad to have you here. Another couple hours of live local talk. Of course, you're a big part of the show, the phone line and the text line. And even if you're not chiming in today, it's good to have in your contacts. If you go in there and just put, you know, FM Talk 106.5 and then 251-343-0106. And if you have the app, which is free and waiting for you at the App Store for iPhone users or Google Play for Android users, you'll have that app. You can call straight from the app. You can text from the app. You can even leave us a talk back message, record a message, it emails it to us, and we can play it back on the air. So check that out as well. All right. A couple things, and it is the second Tuesday of the month, and I look up and I see Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran in the studio. Good to see you.
Glad to be here.
I'm going to get into the stack of questions I have for you, and then, of course, everybody, this is your chance to ask the sheriff, so you can call or text in your question for the sheriff this hour at 343-0106. I did see this story, and you don't have to comment on this or if you don't want to, but I put this on Twitter a second ago. If you ever thought you had a bad parenting day, I'm talking to parents out there, where you go, you know, I probably could have done that better or said it differently to the child or whatever. this is from WPMI. According to Mobile Police, on Saturday, September 10th, approximately 11:03 a.m., officers responded, to get the address to these apartments, in reference to a domestic involving one stabbed. Upon arrival, officers discovered the victim was stabbed by his girlfriend, identified as Dakara Cordier, while holding their one-year-old child. During the altercation, the child was also cut and sustained a minor injury. Both victims transported to the hospital for treatment. So if you're ever having a bad parent day, at least you weren't holding the husband or the boyfriend holding the child while the girlfriend was trying to stab the guy and ends up cutting the child in the mix. So just there you go. It's a,
you reckon the boyfriend was holding the child as a defense, trying to keep her from stabbing him and say,
it says he was holding, it was holding the child. Was he using the child as a shield? You have a lot more experience, but in my world, there's like, at that point, you wait for another time to take it out. Yeah, to stab. You wait for another time when the child is child's not in the mix. All right, so much to talk about with you today. I do want to start off with a subject you and I have been talking about for a long time, and I talked about this with Chief Deputy Birch the other day as well, and you know my concern in this fentanyl situation. Uh-huh. It just scares me on so many levels. As a parent, it scares the heck out of me. Talk about the bust we've made around here, the fentanyl that comes through, the number of deaths around the country, let alone in Alabama, that have just moved up substantially from overdose deaths.
Yeah, it's increasing exponentially.
And I asked this question the other day. I said, if the drug dealer, and this is a nuanced conversation because I know people say, well, they're not supposed to be drug dealers. I get that. But if a drug dealer is handing out a pill that they know could have enough fentanyl in it that it would kill somebody, right? I mean, the other drugs could, if people did so much of them, they could overdose and all that stuff. But one pill, if they're handing it over, what's the difference between that and handing over a cyanide pill to somebody?
Well, if they know for sure that it's got that much,
well, even if there's a good chance.
Well,
I mean, if you're,
I guess if it's a good chance, but not the same as cyanide. But yeah, it's reckless. I mean, it's reckless actions. And
to
so
me,
things like manslaughter and other charges should apply.
That's what I'm, and we'll get to what Representative Simpson talked about here, but this because I was talking about the amount of fentanyl and the different charges in that, but just the idea, I started thinking about this, because if I gave you a pill, okay, let's say I had a jar full of pills somehow, and I knew that Some could have cyanide in them. Some have acetaminophen or whatever. And I hand you that. I mean, isn't that? I mean, I knowingly have could be giving you something that could kill you dead. It seems so different to me.
Could knowingly cause me death. But it's kind of like Russian roulette. If you hand somebody a revolver and you've got three bullets,
exactly
in him,
right. Russian roulette
says take his chance because that's what you're doing.
That's what I'm getting at. So yeah. I wonder, and I know that in what's coming out in the legislation that Representative Simpson's talking about, we can dig into the charges for the transporting and trafficking certain amounts. But just that core question, and maybe I'm stuck in a rut here on this, and I have been for a while, but it in a situation where the negligence, it's weird, we're talking like we're talking about a company or something, we're talking about drug dealers, but the negligence of handing out a pill that could have enough of this fentanyl in it could kill somebody dead, that you know can kill people dead.
Mm-hmm.
You're not ignorant to the fact that that it has to be something bigger than just drug dealing to me.
Drug dealing is pretty bad in and of itself.
It does, but at least they could say, okay, listen, the person has to do way more of the drug or whatever it is to kill them.
Well, some drug dealers and drug users now are carrying Narcan themselves.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. I guess they want to get so high, what they think they want to push it all the way to the edge without overdosing, but just in case, hey, shoot me up with this if I overdose. And I don't know, but I can't imagine two people sitting there and say, okay, you get high first and I'll wait on you, and then I'll wait on you. I wouldn't trust somebody like that.
Well, the Narcan thing, too, I know we're off on chasing rabbits here, but the Narcan thing we talked about the other day, that it is available out there, and then the times we live in, I know parents will say, well, I'm not going to have that because I'm not going to have anybody in my house do it.
Now you have the accidental overdoses and stuff, that occur and where people are not using drugs.
Right.
We've had a number of law enforcement officers get exposed to it.
They just touching somebody, right?
Yeah, just the powdery something or just, in the air or something around it or something.
Am I being reactionary that I think that I would buy some of that to have?
By Narcan?
Narcan, yeah, because they say it's available at pharmacies now.
Yeah, a lot of it depends on what line of work you're in and what kind of people you're around, stuff like that, I think would go towards making that decision. But it was interesting at the news conference the other day, Representative Simpson held up a little bag of Splendid, I think, and said, this right here, if it was fentanyl, it would have enough to kill 500 people in it. That's a good example of just how powerful this stuff is.
Yeah, if you're walking around with something like that, something like that of another source, you'd have it in a container that has two locks and all those kind of things. And here it is, walk around in baggies, right? Or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
So the legislation that he's introducing for the 2023 session, that's not going to be here till March, which is nothing against Representative Simpson. There's no way to have the session any earlier, but we're going to have how many people will overdose and die between now and then. The stats were getting...
That is true. Of course, even if the law was on the books, I don't know if that's going to necessarily stop people from overdosing and dying.
True.
But at least we'd be able to penalize with mandatory minimum sentences on those that do profit from that business.
And it's got to be – so some of the limits here, I think, was changing the mandatory minimum sentence of 10 years, $100,000 fine. If you have 2 to 4 grams of fentanyl, 4 to 8 grams of fentanyl trafficked would receive a mandatory minimum sentence of 25 years and a $500,000 fine on there. And then if you have 8 grams or more, you would serve a minimum sentence of life in prison and pay a minimum fine of $750,000. Is that ask you a frank question. Is that going to change the behavior out there? Is it going to just help you get people off the streets? Or do you think that kind of threat is the drug dealers are going to say, I'm not going to do this anymore?
It affects a few people, but many drug dealers go about it thinking they won't get caught. And but generally, we know that people that traffic drugs, after they serve a sentence, they generally get out and traffic drugs again. And so if you'd have to put somebody away for life, it's probably worth it to pay their expenses for life because of all the people they would kill by pushing these deadly drugs.
The temptation to move fentanyl versus other drugs, that part I get from a the profit center thing. I get why they shifted to this, right? I mean, you just talk about how little, instead of bringing in a tractor trailer where they put the false walls in and put the marijuana in and stuff, they can just bring
as much as in a cigar box to supply everybody in the city. You know, it's just so powerful. I've never seen, and I'm still trying to get my arms around it. I've looked for over four decades. I've been in law enforcement, and most of my early career was spent in narcotics, working narcotics, and I went through the original heroin days in the mid 70s, then I went to the T's and Blues, and then I went to the Dilaudids, then I went through the freebasing cocaine, the Richard Pryor stuff, and then I went to the crack cocaine, and then we moved on to the opioids, back to heroin, and now fentanyl. And clearly this is the most dangerous of all of those drugs and causing more death than all those other drugs.
I mean, that's a lot of things you listed before you got to fentanyl, and you said yeah. This is the and the idea here, and I know I've talked about it, but if people haven't figured this out, one of the dangers here is these people make, and I know the thing that blows my mind is that they're putting it in all kinds of stuff. All kind of drugs have these fentanyl in it, but the opioid pill imitation, not whatever they are, mm-hmm. They're trying to create this. They are doing what a pharmacy with technicians and high mm-hmm. tech and measuring and all that it would take to make pills or at pill mm-hmm. companies and producers. They're doing this. I have seen pictures. They're doing this in a Tupperware bowl next to a pill press.
And they have pill presses and they can make it look just like a legitimate.
So explain that to people that don't know exactly how this happens. So they put the fentanyl in something, right? Like
They'll mix it up and add filler ingredients and put some of that in it and make it look like a certain type of pill or certain type of opioid pill or something like that.
And, they press it out and it comes out looking like the pill.
Yeah, you can buy the presses to make it into a pill. And so then they'll say, hey, look at all these so-and-so tabs I got. You know, and of course, some people will crush it up and snort it. Some people will crush it up, melt it, and inject it in their veins and different ways.
So
different styles of using drugs. But they're just – the fentanyl is just stretching out their ingredients.
But they've got this Tupperware bowl, this big Tupperware mm-hmm. bowl. They're mixing this stuff up in their perfect world, the ratio would be the same for every pill, the amount of fentanyl, you know, to make each pill
in a real scientific pharmaceutical manufacturing
there's
plant.
There's X number of grains or half a grain in each thing or whatever.
Yeah, but I'm sure these people are pretty sophisticated, the ones that really ultimately are making it. I mean, they're... You know, heck, it could be people that previously worked in some of these manufacturers.
Then how are they killing people? You know what I'm saying? You hear these stories where somebody takes one of the pills, like one of the pills is enough to kill somebody, and the next pill doesn't have the full amount.
Well, obviously, that's probably why they no longer work at a pharmaceutical company because they weren't good at what they were doing. You know, I just don't know.
So you think there's that kind of training that's coming into this world, like people that had worked in.
Yeah, I think it's especially in some of these third world countries where this money driven, Mexico and
yep.
the Chinese manufacture the fentanyl, send it to Mexico and then the illegal labs there. Remember, if you go back 25, 35 years ago, they had your cocaine labs out in the middle of the jungles mm-hmm. in Colombia and they would be manufacturing it there. I mean, now you've got buildings with makeshift labs in them.
Yeah, and from we already said the drug dealer, it's less risk to bring it across the border, mm-hmm. easier to hide. Second of all, instead of having a big field full of marijuana or coca leaves or something like that, that the eye in the sky can see, if I just got a bill, this can all go on under a roof, right?
The cartel guy says, hey, instead of lugging these 50 pounds of marijuana across the river there, mm-hmm. carry these 6 ounces over there for me.
And he didn't have to have a bunch of acreage that you could fly over mm-hmm. and see
yeah.
growing something. You're saying you can just put it in a house, right? Put it in a building.
That's right. It's I like to say it's narco-terrorism. Well, they're killing us from the inside out by shipping that stuff over here.
So how do you interdict something you can't see from the sky?
Well, again, it turns into that political debate about secure the borders.
There you go. Coming right back.
But, we've got secure borders.
Yeah. Kamala Harris told us again, Vice President. Yeah, yesterday. That was something. Coming right back. More with Sheriff Sam Cochran right here on Midday Mobile. Get your questions next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1224. And it's your chance to ask the Sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest. This hour, Don asking if you could speak to whether, because we're talking about Representative Simpson's bill filed for the 2023 session, which, by the way, he'll be on Monday with us. Said, could the sheriff speak to whether mandatory minimums are a good thing, in your opinion?
I think they are, because I can go way back into the 80s, and both in federal court and state courts, where you would have some inconsistent sentences placed on defendants. Somebody would get 20 years, somebody might get straight probation and stuff, and it was all based on the draw of the judge or other influences in that court system. And there was a time when the federal judges, I mean, they just, you know, what do you do with a federal judge that's on a lifetime appointment? And there were a few of them were, you know, convicted in the cocaine trafficking days down in Biloxi. I think there was a couple. But at any rate, that started mandatory minimum sentencing, and of course, mandatory minimum sentencing on, you know, three strikes, you're out, the habitual offender, and then it just carried over into to drug trafficking. And
so you think it's a good
thing? I think it's a good thing.
All right. Jerry in Fort Morgan says there have been a couple cases where dollar bills have been found in parking lots with this drug on them. I believe I saw where one person was arrested. Will they be charged with attempted murder?
I don't think that would rise to the level of attempted murder. And, of course, I don't know if they found fentanyl on that particular case he's talking about. I did see in the news, national news or something, where $1 bill somewhere was tainted with fentanyl. And then I saw the news where this, I think it was a lady, dropped it in front of the police department. I've never heard the outcome of that, if they tested it for fentanyl. And I suspect that was more of a get back at the police type kind of thing to scare the police or something.
If I touched it, if I took my bare hands here, if I touched fentanyl with my bare hands.
I think you still got to somehow get it ingested into your mouth or nose.
Subcutaneous, whatever it goes.
Well, I think it depends on just how strong it is.
Okay.
I probably can't speak to that.
All right. Jessica says, we know that fentanyl's lethal. The parents are terrified. Why aren't we addressing how it got to Mobile? What percentage comes from Mexico? What percentage comes into our port?
Well, we figured the majority of all of it comes through Mexico. The feds pretty much have isolated that it goes from China to Mexico, and then it's smuggled in from Mexico. Now, I guess if we knew how much was coming into the port, we'd be able to make arrests and stuff. But anytime we arrest somebody, it's always our goal to try to get those people to cooperate or
go up the ladder.
And we are more successful than what a lot of people think, because when we turn cases over to the feds and work with some of these task forces, it may be 6 months to a year, 2 years before somebody eventually may be arrested along the Texas border or something like that. But and then, of course, you know, you see us stop people on the interstate traveling through. They're not coming to Mobile, but we're working with other authorities. And so it's a team effort across the country to try to take as much of it off the streets as we can. But we just don't know how much comes through the port and stuff. Years ago, it seemed like there was more that came into the port. I don't have a good handle on that. That's something customs and all. But you just don't hear about the big seizures on ships and stuff anymore like you did years ago.
This we'll go to the break here, but Calvin says this is the stories that break our heart. Calvin says, where is it? Buddy from work just buried his 37-year-old cousin yesterday. Cocaine was laced with fentanyl and killed him on the spot. If there's ever been a reason not to do drugs, fentanyl is it.
Yeah, see, that's what we're running across. Some people may be a first-time or early user of drugs. And, you know, we had this 15-year-old in Mobile recently. She was not like an addict or anything, but she was doing drugs with her boyfriend. And I don't know if it was the first time or not, but it was laced with fentanyl. And boom, killed her.
She's dead. 15-year-old dead.
15-year-old.
I mean, these aren't isolated stories.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that are not hardcore drug addicts or you know, sampling drugs or something they think is a recreational drug, and it turns out to be their last. And just like they say, one pill can kill.
Yeah, and you understand the absolute fear of parents out there.
Yeah.
We fear them getting drugs in the first place. But, you know, this idea that they get something and you could get them help or do something.
Yeah, just don't.
First time, they're dead.
Just because you see another kid do it and they're okay, don't you do it, because you may get the pill that's improperly laced with it.
And it's been a conversation I've been having in my house, and it's a weird one. It's like, you just say no to everything. Okay, that's fine. But at a certain point, you know that kids are, you know, teenagers are going to make teenage choices.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you say, well,
that peer pressure makes you make those choices and just got to, I don't know, create a greater peer pressure at home, which is hard to do sometimes in some families.
All right, coming back to the phones next at 343-0106, and also a bunch of text in this mix. We'll get to that. Then I've got questions about the amount of money that, you know, you and I talked about this before, the constitutional carry, the concealed carry bill. What this means to your department. I know Landyap did a story on it. I want to ask you some questions on that and a whole lot more when we get back. Right here, your chance to ask the sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran, our guest.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Good to have Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran in the studio, so you get your chance to ask the sheriff. Dirt Digger asked, if I have a pistol permit, can you have a firearm on school property in your vehicle? Thank you to Sam for your service to our community.
Yes, you can. The federal law that prohibits guns on campuses makes an exception if someone has received a properly authorized pistol permit from the authority, which is the sheriff of that county.
All right, we're going to come back to questions about the permit and some of the revenue questions in just a second. Go to the phones first. And first up, Tony is in Mobile. You're on with Sheriff Cochran.
Yeah, my question is regards to the mandatory minimum sentences. You know, from what we've always viewed as on the mandatory minimum, you know, you're locking up the bottom level guys that are 15 years to life, but the people that own the boats, the planes, the, you know, the major infrastructure to get the drugs, they're the ones getting 2 years, 3 years. So locking up a bunch of guys on the street, giving them, you know, mandatory minimum, even life sentences, that's really not plugging up the gap. When you, again, you got the major infrastructure that are bringing in these drugs that are still, once they get caught, they're still getting very low sentences. You know, 1 year, 2 years, the cartels, the El Chapos, those are the ones that got the infrastructure to bring it in, they're the ones getting the less sentences. So that's where I don't understand why the lower level gets more.
Okay. Sheriff?
Well, I would disagree with him somewhat. The mandatory minimum is generally with trafficking offenses, and trafficking offenses, the term trafficking is usually regulates a minimum amount, which is usually quite a bit. You know, it used to be for cocaine, be like, you know, different levels of kilo and up, and, you know, it wouldn't be grams of cocaine and stuff. And then, of course, look at, we brought some people in from Mexico and all like that the last few years, and many of them are serving life in prison in the United States that were at the head of the cartels, the ones that we could get. And these people at the lower levels he speaks, if they would cooperate, and I know a lot of people don't like to cooperate or be a snitch or they fear for their life. Of course, they put themselves in that position, and there's opportunity for them not to get the mandatory minimums when they cooperate with authorities. So it's the whole intent. Our intent always is to go to the top if we can, but you know, most of it originates overseas.
All right, Tony, appreciate the call. Yeah. Carol is in Mobile. Carol, you're on with Sheriff Cochran.
Yes, I'd like to know, can you put that fentanyl, I can't say it.
Fentanyl?
I want to know, can you put it in marijuana and it'll kill you?
Yeah, it would, if it's put in marijuana.
Didn't they have a story somewhere, it wasn't here in Alabama, but somewhere that they had fentanyl in marijuana?
I think I've read, yeah.
Which I don't understand news, why they would put
it. Don't make sense. To me, it seemed like it'd be a waste of the fentanyl,
right,
if you were the dealer, but... you know, some people do things for kicks and try to see if they can make somebody get higher than what they were expecting to get. But it can be, but it's not an alarming rate right now that I'm aware of.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Carol. Appreciate the call. Let's see. Somebody text here. Probably not the best way, but can... Okay, probably not worded the best way, but this is what the texter says, Ben says, but can self-defense change from person to person in an altercation, or does it fall on the original instigator? Can self-defense change from person to person?
Well, I guess it'd have to be clear evidence that the altercation stopped or something, but, you know, a person that starts an engagement can't use self-defense as a defense if they started something.
Okay, so once they start something, they can't be self
yeah, then they can't turn around and try to say, you know, stop, I give, and you know, and get beat up or something like that.
Chris says, why are they using fentanyl?
Because it's money-driven. The people that are originally trafficking it are making money, but those that are shooting it up or getting high from it, it gives them an extreme high, just like heroin, and it's cheaper than heroin, and it's cheaper than opioids. And I mean, it's like an opioid, like heroin, and as we've tightened up on the opioids, you know, the doctors are less likely to write the scripts. The pharmacies are being monitored, how many are going through. The wholesale manufacturers are being monitored. So it's harder to get illegal opioids, and so that's created, I guess you'd say, the perfect storm for the fentanyl.
I mean, this is something you and I talked about when the pill mills were shut down.
Yeah.
And you knew then that there were, I mean, demand was still there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, not saying it wasn't right to shut down the pill mills, but when they were taken away, here comes the market in to fill in that
demand. That's right. Demand. We've historically always had more pill mills, and it was evidenced by the national statistics that Alabama had more pills than any other state. And Mobile at one time was the highest per capita. And I always noticed that, and you recall me saying it. We never really had a big heroin problem in Mobile
because
there was also so many pills, whereas other places had more heroin. And we've just went straight from opioids, a little bit of heroin, now to
fentanyl. You said it came up for a second. We had heroin in town, and then I guess
just never got seriously as bad here as the other because the opioids are everywhere.
Terry asks, why do you have to go to the Maine Sheriff's Office to acquire a concealed carry permit?
Well, because we have to print out the well, you don't have to go. You can get it over the Internet right now, for sure. But we like to print out a pictured ID, and once we give you that first ID, then you can renew it over and over after that by the Internet.
Okay. And I would come back
and
to that.
And we staff the office with three or four people, and we just don't have the people to put out in the necessarily rural areas, but again, now that we can do it by internet, what's the use?
There you go. Texture says about fentanyl, it's to create dependence. Other unnamed texture says fentanyl is put in marijuana and any other drug because it's highly addictive. A dealer growing his or her market to sell the product. You were kind of saying that too, that it's gives them the bigger high or something.
It give them a bigger high, but I don't know that they're putting in marijuana to get somebody addicted to marijuana. I mean, generally, while marijuana may be habit forming, you don't look at it as being addictive. But I don't know where would you go get the marijuana that's laced with fentanyl every time if you were addicted? I think that's just more made up stuff or dreamed up stuff.
All right. I want to talk to you because Terry mentioned about concealed carry permits. You and I talked about this a whole bunch. Of course, you were vociferously against, I forget the House bill, whatever, 272.
They did away with concealed carry permits.
Right. And you know, you and I had discussions about the public safety side of it, but we also talked about the revenue side of it. Let's talk about what you're seeing, because it's still, and I want to point out to even our governor, who said during this, like, I was waiting to see what happened before I renewed my permit. You still have to have it till January 1st.
That's correct.
So let's make that clear. People are thinking, like, it's still until January 1st.
Yeah, the law doesn't go into effect until January the 1st, and then after January the 1st, you do not have to obtain a concealed carry permit to carry a concealed weapon in or about your person or in your car. If you want to go out of state and into another state, you still have to have a concealed carry permit. Legislators said, oh, you're not going to see a noticeable decrease in the sales. People are going to still get them anyway. Well, that's not true. We've seen a huge reduction in the number of sales. We're down 3,000-something pistol permits in Mobile County year to date. But worse than that.
And you had total pistol permits issued we were pretty high, I remember. Right?
I think we got up close to 60-something
thousand. Yeah, I wanted to say 55, but okay.
Yeah, I think it was around 61 or 62,000. Okay. And so they're dropping off this year before that law even went into effect. And, of course, they're dropping off by in the multi-years, which is really impacting us financially. So we're down probably 450,000 this year, year to date, in Mobile County and similar.
2021 to 2022, from year to date, or
yeah,
fiscal
from
year,
22 fiscal year to date over year to date 21, we're down that much revenue wise in the permit fund, and it'll only get worse next year.
Okay, I remember I talked to folks on both sides of this issue through the process, I was told that that if there was a loss for a sheriff's department, money had been put aside, mm-hmm, to make up that difference. Is that happening?
The state has said that they'll replenish us, but they only set aside, I think, $2 million with the idea of going up to $5 million. But already the County Commission Association of Alabama is pointing out across the state that revenues are way down, and so they're going to feel the impact because the sheriffs that are using the pistol permit money to fund certain activities are going to go to the county commissions and say, hey, I need this in our budget next year because we don't have the money to do it.
So what looking at it now, from you said you're down 450?
Right.
Or so, looking around the other 66 counties, does $5 million cover the losses?
No, not at all. I think Sonny Brassfield, County, yeah. Brassfield, I think he's predicted something like as much as $13 million may be lost.
So do you make your claim now to get that money? How's that process?
They've come out with it. We can't make the claim until, I think, January. But we are going back to the legislature and ask them to set the baseline for making those claims with the year 2021 and not the year 2022.
Gotcha.
See, the law set 22, but see, we're losing now, so we're gonna it's gonna be a much smaller baseline. But we really need 21 because that's the last full year before it was impacted.
Coming right back, more with Sheriff Sam Cochran right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 1250 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Good to have Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran in studio. Your chance to ask the sheriff. And like always, Sheriff, it's like we should start warming the crowd up like during Jeff's show, because here at the end, now we got that 80 text. I'm going to try to pick through some of these. Let's see. This question, what's the difference between open carry and concealed carry?
Well, open carry, of course, you can visibly see it, and that was legal before as long as it was not in an automobile. Concealed carry, you can carry it concealed about your person, and you can carry it in an automobile.
Did anybody go with my idea of the magnetic holster to put the gun on the outside of the vehicle? Open carry?
I don't guess so now. I wondered one time about whether or not, I never did research it, whether it was legal to carry a pistol on your side while you're riding a motorcycle down the street.
Because it's open.
Yeah, pretty visible.
Yeah, I would, my guess, not this is, and this is the talk show host, not the legal mind, yeah. Says yes. Nick says, I've seen where drugs have washed up on the beaches lately. Who takes the lead on that? Local PD, Coast Guard, the feds? And do you know if any arrests have been made?
Actually, I'm not familiar with that. Something's got by me. Generally, it's turned over to either Homeland Security, Customs, and which is, used to be Customs, or Coast Guard, you know, may do it, and then they'll turn it over to the feds, and then the feds try to take over from there and see if they, you know, match it up with other findings.
What happens there? I mean, is it
usually
somebody getting chased
and across, and they spot somebody like the Coast Guard, or maybe they spot a plane, they think somebody's on to them, and they panic and they just throw it overboard.
Okay.
You know, at one time, though, they were going to locations in the Gulf and stuff and dropping it, and then later go back out with another boat and fish it up off the bottom. But,
yep.
But yeah, when them things float up like that, it's usually somebody's panicked and
pitched them out,
ready to get caught, pitched it out.
Let's see. Tusker, I will pay for my CCP. There are people talking about their concealed carry permits. That is something for, even if you're going to choose not to have one here in the state of Alabama, if you travel, and make sure you check the reciprocity maps, but if you're going to ride out of the state, you still got to have it.
And of course, you know, and I thank you for pointing out here a while back on the show, I heard you say that if given the choice of doing away with the revenue or doing away with the permit, I said do away with the revenue because, you know, I still maintain that the pistol permit, having a background check done on the person before you allow them, there are a lot of people that may not be convicted felons, but they don't need to be carrying concealed weapons about it, and it was one of the best things. And then it took away a huge tool for us investigating crimes, like, say, for instance, yesterday, I think two kids were arrested, no permits at Williamson or something. And, you know, so those guns will be seized, and they'll be test fired, and we'll find out if those guns were used in any kind of crime. But, you know, if they could have possessed them legally, there would have been no reason to seize the weapon and test it. And so a lot of our crimes that we're tying together, we'll lose that in January.
Yeah, so, and Dirt Digger says, I will keep buying the permit because if I get pulled over, the permit will ease the officer. If he sees my firearm, he will feel safer.
Yeah, for sure, because we know he's had a background check.
So the Mariner is asking this question that we just kind of addressed, and I asked you this, that he says it's about the, he said your objections to the bill were based on finances and the trivial arrest of firearm carriers that could not be charged with another crime at that time.
And that's not based on revenue. That's false. I maintained and would have agreed, but they never put forth a bill like that. Now, they came out with this idea, and we're gonna find out here in another few weeks. They said they would have this database completed where it's like persons forbidden to possess, and I just maintained I don't think they can do it. I think they're not going to be able to do it, and if they come out with something, they're going to say, well, it's only got the information that we could get to put in there. Well, we've told them you can't get the information from the other 49 states of convicted felons and people prohibited from doing it, and many cities and counties don't report all their arrests. So, you know, I could deny a pistol permit to somebody, but they could still go carry concealed after January.
We talked about this so much, but not everybody hears every show because they'll say, okay, well, I go in to purchase a firearm, which a whole other story with what they're wanting to do with the credit card things, but they go in to purchase a firearm and you go through a NICS check.
Right.
And you said that the level of scrutiny, NICS check versus concealed carry permit, were different.
Yeah. The NICS check just tells you if you're a prohibited person from if you're a convicted felon in any of the 50 states or a convicted of domestic violence. It doesn't say if you're the town drunk and that you've been arrested for 4 or 5 times for possession of drugs and then reduced down to paraphernalia, which is a misdemeanor, it wouldn't be prohibitive. In a lot of other reasons. Or if
you said on a domestic thing you had talked about before, somebody had been arrested but not convicted.
Sentenced to behavioral management and then null prost. And then another case, the same guy had fired shots into the floor in front of his girlfriend. And so what happens in domestic violence cases, a guy beats a woman or something, gets arrested. The woman says, look, if you just get him to leave me alone, go away forever, I'll drop the charges. He said, good. What's he do? He goes, finds the next woman, next victim. Same thing. It's easier just to get him out of your life than to try to convict him.
Fred asked, is there a tracking method to see the impact of removing concealed carry permits?
Yeah, there was, well, I don't know, say tracking method, but there are some statistics that are put out there that show that the increased numbers of both murders, shootings, and suicides have gone up in those states that have withdrawn the requirement of concealed carry. And that was pointed out in some of the hearings in the legislature, but again, that was just ignored and passed.
This texture, unnamed texture, I've always wondered why we can't have our car tags linked to concealed carry background check. Example, if I get pulled over by the officer/deputy, knows the owner of the vehicle does have a concealed weapon in the vehicle.
It's never been done. It can be done. Now, in Mobile County, when we run a check on you, it does bounce off our pistol permit database. Okay. And, of course, when we do a background check on you, it also bounces off our probate court pickup list. If we've ever gone out to serve a probate warrant on you and for involuntary hearing, we know that as well.
Okay, that information's linked, but like you've said before, it's linked here, but what might have happened in Autauga County or Colbert County or something?
There was a time people didn't want the government to be able to centralize pistol permits.
Right.
Because if the state has a list of everybody in the state, then the federal government only has to go to 50 states to find out every person's
who's got a gun.
But if you've got 67 counties and 67, constitutional sheriffs or whatever that don't have to take orders from the federal government, it would be very, very difficult for them to acquire those records.
Yeah, I wonder if there was any kind of – it could be shared between – it's a moot point now, but could be shared between departments but not warehoused in one place. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. The law requires us to send it to state ABI or state police now, but they don't maintain a statewide database, to my knowledge. We had agreed, the sheriffs had agreed to create a statewide database that we were going to put to where you run a check, it would tell you anybody in the state that had a concealed carry. But before that got created, the state come along and created this other database and did away with the permits.
All right, Sheriff, as always, good to see you. Get you back next month.
Sure thing. Glad to be here, and I always enjoy your listeners' questions and comments.
If people want to get more information, whether it be concealed carry permit information or who's in jail,
they can get
or
a concealed carry on going to our website, mobileso.com. They can follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook. They can anonymously report stuff, and they can download our app that'll let them know who's in jail. Let them know if somebody's got a warrant for them. You can run your neighbor on it and tell us if the neighbor's got a warrant, because we may not know where they're staying right now, and we'll go pick them up.
All right, very good. See you next month.
Fun as always.
Thank all right. You. Coming back next hour here on Midday Mobile. There's a picture I had shared the other day, one of the bear pictures I had put online. Got a listener out there to say, hey, you know, I've been working trapping bears with somebody in Mobile County all summer. Sent me pictures and videos. And I said, okay, you win. Said, yeah, we're doing this with Auburn graduate student Jenna Malzahn, studying bears in Mobile County. You got bear questions? I got bear questions as well. She's going to join us next to talk more about that on Midday Mobile. Phone number on the text line, 251-343-0106. Coming right back. News coming up in just a minute.